The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, gamble wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my well-dressed, dapper colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up on today's show, we're going to see if a carpenter has the right tools to build a championship. We'll explain how the road performances of one particular college team are certainly not hokey. And while so many times a team will let up against a weak opponent, today we think we've got a team that's going in for the kill.
So, Dave, last night, just another regular night of action, right? Just a classic, you know. What'd you see? What'd you see that you want to share?
You know, after game one of the World Series, we hearken back to Roger Angel, our favorite baseball writer, one of the greatest baseball writers of all time, and the way that he was able to make the sport work across that literary landscape. Baseball is conducive to it. But a lot of Roger Angel is subtlety. Last night, this was Tolstoy. Game number six became War and Peace. So much drama, so many plot twists. Not necessarily great baseball, but just so, you know, I couldn't find one particular incident. Could you? Or was there something else that had you distracted from that?
Well, you know, the baseball is always interesting to talk about, and we'll certainly get to an extended take on tonight's Game 7 in just a few minutes when we go to Market Watch. But my first take from last night has to do with football, and it has to do with home field advantage. And this is a question that we get a lot, where people ask, how much is a home field worth? What are the strong home fields? What are the weak home fields? And in general, when we talk about home fields in football, the standard theory is, well, you just give the home team an extra 3 points and that's that. In my mind, particularly in college football, home fields can be worth anything from basically nothing, maybe a one-point edge for teams like Duke or Akron or, you know, Florida Atlantic has a new stadium. Guess what? They got crushed there twice. Northwestern doesn't have a big home field edge. Mississippi State doesn't have a big home field edge. We can go on and on. It's not about necessarily the crowd support. It's about how the team fares, and a lot of these teams don't fare well, including the Miami Hurricanes. And, of course, there are some very strong home fields. We can talk about the Oregon Ducks. We can talk about Hawaii. We can talk about Boise State, home fields that are legitimately worth 5 or 6 points. Yesterday, in our play of the day, we laid a price with the Miami Hurricanes on their home field. Miami, unfortunately, doesn't have that much of a home field edge, as it turned out. And the Hurricanes ended up being straight-up losers. So those of you who took Miami, ourselves included, ended up paying a little bit of a price for a home field that's not worth very much. Let's shift over to Market Watch right now, because we have to get into a discussion of this Game 7 tonight. And obviously on Friday's weekend edition show, we've got a lot of football to talk about. So we're going to talk about the World Series right here. Number four, Game 7, St. Louis opened minus 140. We've actually seen some Texas money in early action, driving that number down to about 135 or so in most locations. Total sitting at 8 with a little bit of money coming in on the under.
So many fascinating elements to talk about from last night. When you think about the number of records that were set, first time a team ever came down from a two-run deficit in the regulation 9 innings and in extra innings. First time in World Series history you had 3 blown saves. Cardinals scored in the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th innings. That had never happened before. But that's all past now. We move forward to tonight. Biggest question right off the bat, Chris Carpenter. Best pitcher, starting pitcher for either team. He's been good in this series already, but now he's going to work on 3 days rest. Historically, he has not been effective in that role, hasn't come up a whole lot. But here's what's interesting for tonight. His last 3 starts, 89, 87, and 101 pitches. That's far below where we saw him during the regular season. Is this a setting where maybe Chris Carpenter can be okay on 3, Or is that three just still such a difficult climb?
Well, three is always going to be a difficult climb. But the bottom line for Chris Carpenter tonight is that the bullpen, or really for Tony La Russa tonight, is that the bullpen behind Carpenter is a mess. And it really, it's the case for both of these teams. Both squads played Game 6 last night like it was a Game 7. Neither team held anything back when it came to putting their best pitchers into the best situations. And for St. Louis, you know, you have Fernando Salas off two innings of work, 48 pitches thrown. Lance Lynn, 1.2 innings of work, 32 pitches thrown. Jason Mott, the closer for the Cardinals, two innings of work, 27 pitches thrown. So all three of those guys not likely to be able to go again today. And if they are, we really have to question their effectiveness.
Yeah, not many options for Tony La Russa in the latter stages. He's going to talk about Lowe. He's going to talk about, you know, using some starters in that role. Kind of awkward words for Texas. Even though they emptied the bullpen last night, the fatigue ratings aren't bad. The only one we would grade negatively would be Derek Holland, who pitched two innings, who simply is not accustomed to being in that role or coming back at all. And you don't really worry about Holland that much because you've got C.J. Wilson to fill the role that Holland would be in. I think the one guy that is a question mark, Alexei Ogando, who just looked bad for the two batters that he faced. His confidence may be shot at this point. Maybe he's not usable. But can they get deep enough for that bullpen to matter? Arguably the worst pitching we've seen from any starter in this series was Matt Harrison in Game 3, where the Cardinals racked him up pretty good in Texas. Can his confidence rebound off of that game to get it deep enough to where that bullpen does become a factor? And also, as the day goes on, there are two things we don't know at showtime. Nelson Cruz for Texas, strained groin, the type of injury that's difficult when it's going to be chilly and in the 40s again. You just don't loosen up. Also, Matt Holliday's finger, they simply won't know if he can play until he steps in and holds a bat in batting practice. Although, you know, Teddy, the way Holliday's performed in this series, is that a great loss?
Well, yeah, the bottom line is that if Holliday doesn't play, we're looking at Alan Craig going for St. Louis, and frankly, they might be better off with him in the lineup. He's had a heck of a World Series. Now, Texas coming off last night's loss, this is a Rangers team that hasn't lost two in a row. You have to go all the way back to August when they lost three straight at home to Boston since we've seen the last losing streak for the Rangers of any type. But tonight, just like last night, has a feel of, you know, who's going to be the hero. Going in the esteemed tradition of guys like Francisco Cabrera, the Atlanta Braves third string catcher who sent them to the World Series, driving home Sid Bream back in the early 90s. And you can go on and on back to the list of guys who have been playoff or World Series heroes that weren't necessarily heroes in the regular season. It wasn't Albert Pujols last night. Certainly Lance Berkman had a pretty big at-bat in the ninth. But the hero for the Cardinals last night, David Freese. I got to think that tonight the hero is going to be a player of that caliber. Someone who's not necessarily the superstar on these two teams is going to have to get something done in order for their respective squad to win the World Series.
Yeah, Freese not just coming up big last night. He's had a terrific postseason. In terms of betting tonight, as people who watch the show know, we had a St. Louis series play last week. So we already have a bit of an investment, and it's nice to be taking $1.40 when you look at what the line is for tonight. If you are looking at the game, though, if you want the St. Louis side, here's one little tip. You might want to think the first half or the first five innings. You're better with Carpenter over Harrison than with those bullpens late, based on what Teddy told you about the Cardinal fatigue ratings, much worse than the Texas fatigue ratings for tonight.
You guys have been sending in great questions on a daily basis. Really appreciate it. Please keep those emails coming. The email address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you got the toll-free listener rant line. Still looking for a crazy rant that doesn't involve my mom? Come on, 866-966-4599. And, of course, you can get involved in the covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/posting forum. It's Friday, which means when we come back, we're not going to do a post-mortem. Instead, we're going to go inside the numbers and answer your viewer email.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, covers the numbers.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Before we go inside the numbers, let's start with a couple of viewer mails from today. Oh, we're going to start with a letter from Brad, who goes, what is your opinion on this game with the Wildcats at home and being a 14-point dog? Brad asking us for our take on Kansas State, Oklahoma.
If you've been watching the show this week, we've addressed this particular game a couple of times, and maybe the reason the question comes up is we haven't actually taken a stance on it. At the start of the week, we talked about the hangover effect of how teams don't respond well after their first loss when it happens after the midpoint in the season. That would have told you that Oklahoma could have been a little bit flat this week, and it was making us look hard at Kansas State. Where that number is, there is a little bit of value to a team that's playing well if the favorite is flat. But now here comes the problem. That trophy case at Kansas State that would usually have the Governor's Cup after they beat Kansas last Saturday, now that trophy is showing the 2003 Big 12 championship when they humiliated Oklahoma 35-7. We're just wondering if maybe that puts a little bit of a chip on Oklahoma's shoulder. From fundamental handicapping at this price point, Kansas State looks like the right side, but there's just that little nudge factor they may have given Oklahoma, and a guy like Bob Stoops who doesn't mind tacking on a late score, maybe just enough to keep us out of there for now. Obviously, if the game fills out at 14, 14 and a half, it's easier to make that decision come game day. I'm going to go to the covers posting forums, and this is from Kush J. Off the top of your head, can you think of a game in history that had worse quarterback play than last week's Oakland-Kansas City game?
Yeah, I thought of a game last week that had at least equally bad quarterback play. I'm not going to say necessarily worst quarterback play because six turnovers from the two QBs from the Raiders is pretty hard to do, and Matt Cassel hasn't had a good game yet this season. But if you watch the Seahawks play the Browns last week, wasn't pretty on either side. Charlie Whitehurst didn't have the same number of picks as his counterparts in Oakland, but Charlie Whitehurst wasn't good at any stage of that ballgame. And frankly, neither was Colt McCoy. We can go back to week 17 of last year when Charlie Whitehurst was also behind center for Seattle in their win over St. Louis. That was maybe Sam Bradford's worst day as a pro. And again, off the top of my head, I remember that went back in 2002, a game where Henry Burris, who went on to be a decent Canadian Football League player, he was not good in the NFL. He was not good for the Chicago Bears. I remember a week 17 game where Henry Burris, I believe he had a QB rating in the range of 10, threw four picks against Tampa. I don't remember who was quarterbacking for the Bucs that day, but he wasn't much better. But, yeah, bad QB games do happen once in a while. We may see another one this weekend. Now, let's shift and go inside the numbers. Dave, I know you've got a good one for us for the Friday weekend preview.
A couple of times on this show the past weeks, Teddy has talked about how teams have struggled coming off of buys under the new collective bargaining agreement. Changes those practice patterns a little bit. Maybe we're going to get the acid test this Sunday, because we're going to see a particular coach who's been absolutely brilliant in this setting and see if this new arrangement also impacts his abilities. We're talking about Andy Reid in Philadelphia and one of the biggest games of the week, Dallas against his Eagles on Sunday night. When we go inside the numbers, look at how solid Andy Reid has been coming off of a bye in his career. 12-0 straight up, 9-3 against the spread. Note that all three of those point spread losses were by 2 points or less. Plus 74 against the spread in those games. That means that he beat the spread by an average of 6.5 points over 12 tries. That tells you that Andy Reid has done an awfully good job of preparing his teams off of a bye. But will that change for him this week?
Coming up, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Now it's time for our Insider Six Pack. We give you six tidbits of knowledge for the upcoming football weekend. Let's start with Navy. We brought up some Navy stuff earlier in the week, and it's time to clarify exactly what's going on with the midshipmen as they travel to Notre Dame this coming weekend. Navy starting quarterback Chris Proctor not going to be able to start this week, and in fact, he may not be able to go as all. Dislocated left elbow. I wouldn't expect to see him at all. That means time for Trey Miller, who has a pretty good pedigree for a Navy quarterback. We're talking about a guy who played for Whitefield Academy in the Atlanta suburbs, and he took them to two straight Region 5 football championships, and he also led them to a Class A basketball championship as a point guard. Last week, Miller got off to a little bit of a slow start against East Carolina, but he found his rhythm late. Three touchdown drives, 126 yards through the air, and he also got 36 more on the ground.
Teddy talked about home field advantages at the top of today's show, and here's one we can tie in a little bit in a little different way. Virginia Tech and their ability to handle the ACC road. On an earlier Inside the Number segment this week, we talked about Tobacco Road Road Dogs, about how the North Carolina ACC schools didn't have a big home field advantage. That kind of goes throughout that conference. Here's where it gets interesting. Virginia Tech travels about as well as any team in the country. They've got a very passionate fan base. That means that in these conference trips, not only do their fans want to go, but there are plenty of tickets available. So how has Virginia Tech done when favored on the road in conference play? How about 17-4 against the spread since joining the ACC? They're a road favorite at Duke tomorrow. If you watch the game, don't be surprised if it seems like they have about half of the fans in attendance.
Yeah, I'll take the over half, maybe, for Virginia Tech fans in that ballgame. Duke continues to struggle to draw an audience. Let's go now to the Northwestern versus Indiana game in Big Ten action. It looks as if Dan Persa is going to be good to go. In fact, we have a quote from Northwestern head coach Pat Fitzgerald that Dan Persa is, quote, good to go. So that is no longer a debate as to what's going to happen with Northwestern this weekend. But we are going to see a change on the other side. Indiana going with the true freshman, Trey Robinson, going to get his first career start here. He's the best runner of the three QBs that Kevin Wilson has on his roster, and that probably speaks volumes about the Hoosiers' offensive line when you need a scrambling quarterback to have any level of success. Of course, this week, a reasonable defense for Robinson to get his feet wet against. Coming up, however, for the Hoosiers, trips to Ohio State and Michigan State, not going to get much easier for the freshman quarterback.
Some more Friday Insider six-pack cleanup. And it's what we'll do a lot of times on Fridays is revisit things we talked about early in the week for clarification. If you catch us missing one or two, go to the Covers posting forum. We'll go in Saturday morning and help to do some clarification there. Colorado, what they feared is going to happen, happens. Tyler Hansen, quarterback, will not be able to play tomorrow. Nick Hirschman is going to get his first college start. Just been a terrible, terrible season of injuries for the Buffaloes. But think about how bad it's going to be for Hirschman. Top running back, Rodney Stewart, is out. Top wide receiver, Paul Richardson, also out. He doesn't have a lot of tools to work with, and the defense is even worse shape for tomorrow.
Let's talk about the Lions and Broncos at Invesco Field this Sunday. They're pricing the game right now as though Matthew Stafford is going to be good to go for Detroit. And after practicing for each of the last two days, that appears to be the case. Here's a quote from Lions head coach Jim Schwartz, quote, he has improved today over yesterday, and I think he's on a pretty good track right now. It's almost a shame, because I wouldn't have minded taking advantage of the nice reduced price point had Sean Hill been getting the start here for Detroit. But one of the better matchups we're going to see is that Detroit defensive front going against the inexperienced Tim Tebow this time around. By the way, if you do keep stats and you want to keep your database accurate, the NFL has officially changed the number of sacks Tim Tebow took in Miami last week. Initially reported as 7 sacks that Tebow took. Well, the NFL issued a statement. It's down to 6 sacks that Tebow took against a modest Dolphins pass rush.
One quarterback situation we cannot clarify yet is in Seattle. Teddy mentioned how bad that Seattle-Cleveland game was last Sunday. The Seahawks, 9 first downs, 137 yards. Charlie Whitehurst just had a miserable game. Tavares Jackson has had limited reps in practice the last 2 days. He's not out there full scale yet. They're probably not going to know until Sunday if he can make the start. But the one thing they are confident of, Marshawn Lynch back in at running back. A big part of what went wrong for Whitehurst was just the inability to have a run threat between the tackles. The two backups that they have, Leon Washington, Justin Forsett, they're both only 5'8". They're change of pace guys who are better receivers out of the backfield. They're sweep runners to get to the corners. They're not guys that you're going to respect going between the tackles. With Marshawn Lynch back, the gap between Charlie Whitehurst and Tavares Jackson may not be all that major anyway.
When we come back, not one, but a double dose of money time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, this is what you've been waiting for. It's money time! Okay, let's go to Lincoln, Nebraska. We're going to start right here with the Cornhuskers, -4, over under 49.5.
We know people are waiting for the money time segment. I hope you weren't waiting for the money time opening. Fascinating game here in Lincoln, in that the classic conundrum of point spread value versus the situational aspects that impact a game. This line's wrong. Michigan State's better than Nebraska. Alter the timing of this game, put it a week later, if it would have been played earlier in the year, we bet the Spartans here. +4 is certainly a value. Here's the problem. The last 2 weeks, Michigan State, major emotional games against Michigan and against Wisconsin. What has Nebraska done the last 2 weeks? A bye and a game against Minnesota, which is actually the equivalent of two byes. They're going to be the fresher team. Is that enough to make them the better team in this setting? I don't know. There's still a part of me that wants that +4, but it's saying, no, don't do it. Your timing just isn't right.
Yeah, and it's a classic case of the situational versus fundamental type of thought process when you go through a college football card. And most times when you have a situational edge that really favors one team and a fundamental edge that really favors the other, and you end up passing the game. And that's what I ended up doing with this contest. Nebraska, Michigan State, not on my service card for the weekend. That being said, if this line drifts up, I mean, Michigan State's the better of these two teams, even in a bad situation. And when we look at this Nebraska run defense, really ugly numbers. Look at what happened against Wisconsin and Ohio State, 474 yards on the ground against that Huskers defense, 5.2 yards per carry. Those aren't the type of numbers for a team that should be laying points against really a top 10 caliber foe. And the bottom line for this Nebraska team this year, in my mind, one of the more disappointing teams in football. I haven't had them ranked in my 25 at any point this season. They've been a point spread disaster area. The defense hasn't been good. And Taylor Martinez at the QB position continues to make a consistent bevy of bad throws downfield. I'm not impressed with the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Let's go to Jacksonville, Florida. The world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Right now, Georgia -3, total of 49. If it's anything like last year's game, a 34-31 overtime win by Florida, we're in for a very entertaining afternoon. Maybe not the same type of scoreboard tallies. Close game might not be quite that explosive because we got some questions about the quarterback play.
Well, I mean, Florida's owned this series 18-3 in the last 21 meetings, and that has a lot to do with the fact that they've had the better QB play throughout the course of the last 2 decades. I'm not convinced that's the case this year. We look at John Brantley back at QB for the Gators this week. He's still only been average at best this season, and the offense has a key ingredient that's still going to be missing, or is lacking a key ingredient that's still going to be missing, and that's any sort of interior running game. For the Georgia side of the equation, the sophomore, Aaron Murray, he threw 3 interceptions as a freshman in last year's loss, but he's maturing into one of the better, maybe the best, a QB in the SEC right now. And his ability to spread the ball has allowed 16 different Bulldogs receivers catching at least one pass so far this season.
And we talk a lot about how certain parts of football offenses impact others. We mentioned Seattle a few minutes ago. When you don't have that ability to run between the tackles, it allows the defense to focus on other things. It's been a problem with Florida. When you look at Rainey and Demps, arguably the two fastest and most talented players on the same team anywhere in the country, you think, wow, they could be so explosive. Get them the ball on the perimeter. If you can't run the ball between the tackles, the defense is spread wide, and even players that talented get negated. Can having Brantley back perhaps give some more options for that Florida offense? I don't know at this point. I'm inclined to think under a little bit here at 49 or better, because until Florida can show that they can run the ball and get into second and four instead of second and seven or second and eight, those two good talents on the outside just get wasted.
Now let's go to Columbus, Ohio, where Wisconsin travels to face Ohio State. The Badgers -7, total in that ballgame, 50.5. And as we referenced on yesterday's show, the last 69 home games for Ohio State at the Horseshoe, they've lost exactly one of those home games by more than 7 points. It is worth noting, however, that one loss did come against these same Wisconsin Badgers. And when these two teams met last year in Madison, it was all Wisconsin, 31-18 at home. And frankly, I'm not convinced the game was even that close. I had an Ohio State ticket in my pocket that day. That was a wrong side loser.
Of course, we should also add, though, the win that they got here by more than 7 was a Barry Alvarez win. The two trips under Brett Bielema, very, very similar scores, 38-17, 31-13. It brings a little bit of a confidence issue into play. Even though Wisconsin is better than Ohio State, the kids might not necessarily know that or feel that, especially coming off of a loss where your confidence might be at a little lower ebb. When you walk out into the Horseshoe and you haven't even been close in your last two trips, could mean a little bit of a swagger missing. Where the matchup, I think, gets broken down the best is, can Ohio State find any way to succeed through the air? Without Devere Posey, that wide receiver core just hasn't stepped up well. Braxton Miller, good running quarterback, a couple of weeks with last Saturday's bye to tweak some things around him. And, of course, with Dan Heron, his first game back against Illinois, ran for over 100 yards. So there's a dynamic. Quarterback can run, running back can make plays tandem. But can they throw the ball? Because I don't think you can beat Wisconsin running only.
Yeah, but the fact that the Buckeyes have had the extra week to prepare for this matchup certainly gives them a chance to tweak the playbook a little bit to allow the freshman QB Miller a little bit more of an opportunity to throw the ball downfield. Because as you mentioned, Dave, this Buckeyes passing game has been suspect at best so far in 2011.
Let's head over to the Coliseum in Los Angeles. Stanford and Southern Cal. Stanford now in the national championship race, legitimately off of last Saturday. Cardinal laying 7.5, total 59.5. As Teddy talked about at the top of the show, there are certain programs that don't have great home field advantages. One of the things you want to file away is note that the city schools traditionally do not, because people in those places have other things that they can do. They do not pack the house. What's going to be interesting for us to watch is, now that Stanford is a legitimate championship contender, how many Stanford people are going to be in the Coliseum? It's a huge, huge stadium. There are plenty of seats available. That home field advantage might not be that major for Southern Cal. And when you got a guy like Andrew Luck at quarterback, your team's just going to play with poise and not be bothered much by a crowd that's against you anyway.
Yeah, but that being said, last year USC gave this team everything they could handle. 37-35, Stanford came away with a win. They never really sniffed a point spread cover in that ballgame. They were double-digit chalk at home. I believe at the close that might have been in the 9-9.5 range, but they were favored by more than a TD, certainly, at home. And the 37-35 final score, that was an accurate depiction of what went on in that game. First downs were 27-24. Total yards of 478-498. It wasn't like Stanford had an edge, a legitimate edge, on either side of the football.
The one question we do have about Stanford, every win this year by 26 points or more. But the only bowl opponent that they may have faced was just Washington. That means you've had a lot of walkovers against easy teams. Teddy, can you remember the last time we saw a team this deep in the season that hadn't faced the pressure situation at all?
No, but I'm sure there was one. I mean, I'm sure there's probably one within the last year or two. But the bottom line is that this Cardinal team has not been tested in any way, shape, or form this year. I'm not saying that they're not going to play with poise when they are tested, but the bottom line is that if you've been in a number of tough games and have survived those games, I think it's an edge versus a team that has won every game this year, as you mentioned, by 26-plus, and only one of the teams they faced likely to go bowling. That's the win they had last week against the Washington Huskies. And let's not forget how Stanford has been an absolute disaster for every bookmaker in the country. There's not a team that has cost the bookies more money this year. The Stanford Cardinal, they always play late. All the parlays are tied into Stanford, and Stanford has been a point spread machine so far this season. So really, from a power rating perspective, these two teams a lot closer than the point spread might indicate. However, the flood of public money on Stanford has been unabated all football season, and that's forced the odds makers and the betting markets to price this one perhaps a little bit higher than it should be.
Let's go to Minneapolis. And why, you ask? Because it's play of the daytime, and we get to have fun with the Floyd of Rosedale Trophy. It's been sitting in Minneapolis for about a year, and that trophy absolutely matters as a part of this game. We talked about Minnesota earlier this week in a postmortem segment about how they gave Jerry Kill a contract extension despite having some very difficult times. We think that was a sign they were waving a white flag. They've been outscored 103-3 in the first half of their Big Ten games, and those were teams that weren't trying all that hard against them. They led up in the second half. Now Iowa, which lost this trophy to Minnesota last year, comes in with a revenge motive. They're not going to let up. The reason we said white flag for Minnesota, their schedule's about to get very hard. Iowa, Michigan State, Wisconsin, it's going to get real ugly. It's their way of saying, we've got a disaster on our hands. We've got a lot of building to do. Let's let the coach know he's got all the time in the world to do it. So our play of the day, the best of the college football board, the Floyd of Rosedale Trophy, is going to head back to Iowa City with the Iowa Hawkeyes. We're going to lay the points with a game that we think is going to break wide, wide open.
When we come back, it's part two of Money Time. We're going to do the NFL edition after this short commercial message.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then. Okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
It's Money Time, NFL edition, and we're going to start our Money Time discussion for the NFL in Toronto, Canada, where the Buffalo Bills, -6, with a total of 45.5 against the Washington Redskins. Heck, it's the only game in Canada all year, NFL style. We got to talk about it.
We mentioned earlier in the week on this show how these home field advantages for Buffalo haven't been there in Toronto. Crowd count's much smaller than what they get in Rich Stadium. Surprisingly, a lot of fans rooting for their opponents, not for the Bills. They just sort of thought, yeah, we'll just drive around the lake, we'll go to Toronto, and people will still like us. We're locals. That has not been the case. Very little home field advantage. So it makes us want to look to Washington, plus the points here, to be competitive. But Teddy, are the Redskins healthy enough? Can we trust that offensive huddle to get the job done for us?
Well, certainly injuries for Washington are a huge concern in this ballgame. The Redskins are going to be playing this game without the running back, Tim Hightower, without their leading receiver, Santana Moss, without their top tight end, Pro Bowl tight end, Chris Cooley, without two key components on the offensive line, Corey Lichtensteiger and Trent Williams. Those are big losses on the offensive side of the football, but at the same time, it's a Buffalo Bills defense that has proven to be very vulnerable this year, both against the run and the pass. The Bills allowing 385 yards per game, 6.6 yards per play. Those are bottom-tier numbers when it comes to the NFL statistics.
Yeah, one of the things I think you can look for here is Washington under Mike Shanahan, a ball-control offense. A lot of running, a lot of short passes, all the things you want to do against a defense like Buffalo's. So even though a lot of people are hurt for Washington, when you see how many holes the Bill defense has, you got to believe that Washington can find ways to keep controlling the football. The longer you're holding the ball with a +6 in your pocket, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, of course. The Bills are 4-2 right now, despite being outgained by a full half yard per snap. And generally, in terms of win-loss records, those tend to even out over the course of the season for teams that are getting outgained by a significant margin. Now let's go to Pittsburgh, where the New England Patriots are -3 over under 52 for their matchup against the Steelers this weekend. We have the Pats, another team. You talked about Andy Reid earlier, Dave. Andy Reid and his success coming off a bye. The Patriots, too, have been pretty good off a bye week, and they have some matchup edges against this Pittsburgh defense that have worked out in their favor, including last year when Tom Brady was just about flawless going up against the Steeler defense.
It's just remarkable numbers for Brady in his career against the Steelers, averaging 337 passing yards per game. Compare that to 302 as the second best against any other opponent. It's 35 more yards per game against Pittsburgh than anybody else, despite the fact that the Steelers annually have one of the best defenses in the NFL. Problem is the Steelers just don't cover tight ends or running backs that well. It's a pressure defense built around big outside linebackers who can stop the run and who can rush the passer, but that gets taken out of play when New England goes hurry up, spreads the field, throws the ball out to the running backs, throws the ball to the tight ends down the middle. It's a tough, tough matchup for Dick LeBeau.
Sure, but it might be a tough matchup for this New England defense as well. I mean, the Patriots allowing 6.6 yards per play, tied with Buffalo in the NFL, dead last in that category. The Steelers, 1.9 yards per play better on the defensive side of the football. It's not often that you see a team with a 1.9 yard per play disadvantage defensively laying points on the road in a matchup like this. Really is an awkward point spread in that regard. Mike Wallace, the Steelers, one of the Steelers' big play receivers last year, 136 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns against that Patriots secondary. Of course, even that level of effort wasn't enough to get Pittsburgh the win or the point spread covered in last year's matchup.
So you can see some of the conundrums that we face every week. A game like Michigan State, Nebraska. The line's wrong based on the power, but now you look at the specifics of the setting and you can't do anything with it. New England, Pittsburgh. You will not find a defense with this big of an advantage in overall statistics as a home underdog often, except Brady's particular dominance of this Pittsburgh defense kind of negates those numbers. So you see how you have to weigh so many of these factors so carefully as we move forward. And Teddy, as we move forward next, here comes Andy Reid off of the bye. But how do we weigh this compared to what you've been saying about teams coming off of byes this season?
Well, let's start by going to Philadelphia, where the Eagles, -3.5, total 50.5 for their matchup on Sunday against the Dallas Cowboys. And you talked about Reid off the bye, that 12-0 straight up, 9-3 ATS mark, and 2 of the 3 points spread losses have come by the slimmest of margins. Eagle defense, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, how that Philly defense is getting healthy again. They're going to have a couple of key components back on the defensive line. But yet, here's a Dallas team that has been really remarkable. 1.4 yards per play. They've outgained their opponents. And yet, they're sitting here right now at 3-3, and only one of their 3 wins has come on anything other than a last-minute touchdown or field goal drive.
What's going to be interesting for us to see for Dallas this week is DeMarco Murray. Just had an absolutely brilliant game against St. Louis last week. 25 rushes, 253 yards, coming as a bit of surprise. Yes, it was a great game, but it's also a St. Louis defense that wasn't expecting to see him play that role. Had he earned his way into that spot? A note, Tashard Choice had lost fumbles in back-to-back games. That's what put Murray out there. Now Murray becomes a marked target. The Philadelphia defense sees him. They acknowledge that he's going to be a part of that package. If he's not as good as those numbers indicate, can Dallas run the ball well enough on the road to slow down that Philadelphia pass rush? Because one of the things we talked about last week on this show, we'll talk about a lot in the future, the louder the crowd is, and a Sunday night in Philadelphia is going to be a loud crowd, the more the pass rush is a factor. The Eagles are building their defense to rush the passer. Can Dallas get enough running to slow that down a bit?
And Dave, we're always looking for ways to incorporate Las Vegas into the show. Obviously, we do the show live from Vegas every day. You and I have both lived here for decades. And the bottom line, when you bring up DeMarco Murray, you got to say Las Vegas' own DeMarco Murray, because he is a local Las Vegas product, even though He eschewed UNLV for some reason to go to Oklahoma. I just don't understand it.
Judgment. I mean, why would you want to go to Oklahoma, win national championships, pile up yards, have blockers in front of you, as opposed to those nice road trips that you could make out here to Colorado Springs, Albuquerque, those wonderful places in the Mountain West?
Laramie is a great town. And, of course, UNLV has exactly zero alumni as running backs in the NFL right now. Let's go to Denver. We're going to talk about the Lions, -3, over under 42 against the Broncos for this Sunday's matchup. And this is a Detroit team, as we talked about earlier, expected to have Matthew Stafford healthy and behind center going up against Tim Tebow this Sunday.
Yeah, we sat here for most of the week wanting Stafford to not be able to play. We could take Sean Hill, maybe lay 1.5 or 2, not believing there's all that big of a gap between them. It's the other quarterback that really keys this one. Tim Tebow makes plays with his athleticism, not the traditional quarterback tools. But is there a more athletic defensive front, or is there a better defensive front at chasing quarterbacks than what Detroit is going to bring here? This is a team that will not only chase him, but they will catch him and they will bring him down. If that happens, and if Denver is reduced to having to make traditional football plays, can that offense do it yet?
I'm not convinced that they can, David. Certainly, we talked about Tim Tebow last week. He got all the headlines for leading the Broncos back to a road victory, trailing by 15 late in the fourth quarter at Miami. But, of course, let's not forget Miami is a winless team, and Miami is a pretty bad football team. And Miami made a whole host of mistakes throughout the fourth quarter that allowed Denver to come back and win that ballgame. But prior to that insanity in the last 5 minutes for the Broncos, Tim Tebow had been 4 of 14 for 40 yards against a second-tier, maybe a third-tier, Dolphins defense. He's facing a little bit of a tougher defense this time around than a Detroit team that might have been a little bit fat and happy after starting off the season 5-0. They're not fat and happy anymore after losing their last two, both at home.
So we've got a Detroit team that we believe in that brings a chip on their shoulder. And we actually have a team that Tebow's not going to be that successful against, because not only have they do they have the players in the defensive front to chase him, they've seen him. They have films now. They know the way that Denver is going to try to run those offensive packages. What is this setting us up for?
I think, drum roll please, it's setting us up for
it still looks like you're texting. You know, I mean, that's not a drum roll. It just looks like, you know, you're some young kid in the back of a Starbucks just texting.
So you want to do it for me then? You want to bring in your little snare and get a little tight there for me?
No.
Exactly. So I'm going to have to do it myself, which means, drum roll, please.
Just do it better, that's all.
Time for the play of the day. And our play for Sunday is going to be the Detroit Lions -3 at Denver. Again, Detroit to win by more than a field goal at the home of the Broncos, a team with one of the weaker home field edges in the NFL. And that's going to wrap it up for the Friday weekend preview edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Savransky, here's Malinsky. I did that backwards.
You made it work. You got out of that well.
We'll see you on Monday. Enjoy the games and good luck.